Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast today. My name is Kevin Bland. I'm an Orange County shareholder and a workplace safety attorney for about 20 years now. I'm with Karen Tynan this morning, who is our chair of our West Coast OSHA practice group here at Ogletree Deacons. This podcast is more of a niche topic for safety professionals, HR managers, and operational executives responsible for safety, and anyone that's just a safety nerd that likes to listen to these
like
things.
Like us.
Yeah. So today's topic, we're going to talk about COVID-19 and PPE, probably with the more emphasis on the PPE part of it. Karen, what is PPE and how's that regulated here in the state of California, or Republic of California?
Our Republic. So personal protective equipment is going to fall under our California Code of Regulations, Title 8, and you're going to find the body of the directives under Section 3380. And without reading the regulation in a podcast, because that, of course, is boring, let's talk about just globally what's required of employers. They need to analyze jobs and see what PPE is required. And of course, train employees on the PPE, provide the employees with the PPE and evaluate how the PPE is working. And when we say personal protective equipment, people typically, and especially at this time, they think of mask, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Mask or face shields.
Face coverage.
Yeah. But PPE really is any protection for the head, eyes, face, body, hand, foot. For COVID-19, we a lot of times thought of PPE on sites as maybe the steel-toed shoes or the gloves. And now PPE, it's become quite the topic. You see the talking heads on TV talking about N95 mask, right? All those aspects of personal protective equipment. It's important, I think, for employers to understand how deep their duties are around PPE. It's not a matter of just buying a box of N95 masks and tossing them on the table in the break room, right?
Exactly.
And the analysis that's required for each worker and each job to figure out what PPE really is effective and should be used for the job. So, Kevin, like thinking about safety glasses, a lot of plants just require everybody wear safety glasses, right?
Yeah, we see that all the time. And this is something we were talking about earlier in one of our other casts. The issue is this often is the case, right? Where they're just making a blanket. Everyone wears hard hats. Everyone wears safety glasses. Everyone wears gloves. And it's in their program, but they haven't done the analysis. I've had citations. I've had these inquiries during investigations by Cal OSHA. Well, okay, I see you require safety glasses and ANSI rated safety glasses. What's the basis of that? So what was your analysis of that? Why did you choose this type of safety glass? Why not face shields? Why do you even need safety glasses for this? Or why aren't you requiring safety glasses for something they feel like should? So you need to do an analysis of, let's just take a simple example. It's a factory and they're doing something where there's some shavings that may be flying in the air. So you can identify, here's the machine type they're using. Here's the safety glass, the ANSI rating for these safety glasses. And you have then identified why you use safety glasses for that. And it may be something that the Cal OSHA folks think you should use a face shield for. Well, maybe the manufacturer, and this is part of your analysis, doesn't require you. It suggests safety glasses and not face shield. So those are things that you need to identify or why you aren't using them. Because it's well guarded, there's no particles that come out of the machine because of the way it's guarded. So therefore, we don't need a face shield. We don't need safety glass. So that's also important in your analysis. We see this, and you can use this for many other examples of personal protective equipment, but it's something that's often missed on some of the, what I'll call common PPE yes. that everybody uses.
Right. They just have a blanket rule. And you talked about safety glasses and shavings, and I'm going to stick my foot in it and ask the very loaded question about boots, because foot protection
yes.
can occur by PPE, right? And so we get into these scenarios with Cal OSHA around steel-toed boots, work shoes, whether or not we analyze for a sole to be non-skid. What do you think, and what is your kind of quick words of wisdom around foot protection, PPE? What do you say?
Well, this is very important, and it's in how you word things, right? And here's the common thing. Whatever the hazard is doesn't raise to the level of, let's say, requiring safety toe shoes. But they will put, they meaning a client or a company will put work boots required in their safety. So everyone shall wear work boots, right?
Right.
Leather work boots. Well, when you require that for safety, there's an argument to be made mm-hmm. that that becomes PPE, because you're saying, hey, they need to wear leather work boots for safety. And so right. that's personal protective equipment, arguably. There is a specific regulation that deals with the safety toe shoes and that. But we have citations that are active and alive on this issue. I won't go any further than that with them. But here's the issue. What I recommend doing to get around that is, what can't you wear? Then you're not required to say you can wear whatever, but not specifically. So no open-toed shoes, no low-top shoes, no flip-flops, yeah. no heels, whatever the case may be. So then you're not requiring a certain boot or type of shoe. You're saying what you cannot wear. And mm-hmm. so I think that little nuance gets lost sometimes. And I think it's important for you to pick up. If you don't pick up anything else on this, this is going to save right. you a ton of money in the end and still create a safe work environment by taking into account. Maybe sometimes it's best to say what you can't do as opposed to what you're required to do.
Yes. And something we talk about a lot in the foot protection world and boot reimbursements. So, okay, you stepped in it, so to speak, talking about reimbursements. So we get this question a lot about, what are we required to reimburse for if someone went out and bought their own PPE, maybe their own mask or glasses or boots or whatever. What do you think the best practices are for California employers on PPE reimbursement?
First of all, reimbursement of PPE, if it ends up being PPE, it's required. You have to reimburse.
Yes.
And responsible for making sure it's maintained, cleaned, all of those things. And so when someone wants to bring their own, we see it with safety glasses, we see this all the time, is you're only required to provide whatever the protective device is. So PPE in this context, safety glasses, you may choose a $2 pair of safety glasses that meets the requirements of ANSI, I don't know who Andy is, ANSI, and hand those out. Now, someone wants to buy the nice, fancy Oakley $100 safety glasses for their PPE because they're more comfortable, they look cool, whatever the case may be. Now, they can use as long as they meet the ANSI requirements or whatever your requirements for the PPE.
Yes.
But you don't have to, if they get broken, you don't have to reimburse them for the $100. You can give them another $2 pair and you've met your obligation. So that comes into play.
That's an important nuance mm-hmm. that people don't quite get. And I like the glass example on that.
That's the easiest one. Now, I do want to talk about face coverings just a little bit, because we're talking about PPE, which is personal protective equipment. There are places in some of the guidance documents where Cal OSHA and even their guidance documents have said face coverings are not PPE, because they're, one of the statements is that it's there to protect others, not the person. And so there are some nuances in here. So we don't just automatically determine a face covering is PPE, right? And
right.
so I just think that needs to be taken into account. And I would analyze things on a case-by-case basis. I know a lot of people want a black and white, it is or it isn't. But I think you got to analyze those individually with what is PPE and what isn't, what you're requiring, what you're not, when you require it, when you don't. Not to get too far off on a tangent on that, but I think it's an important nuance that we have to make sure that folks are paying attention to, because think about this, reimburse, not reimburse, or maybe the cost to reimburse a face covering or provide a face covering may actually, even though it may not be considered PPE, the cheaper way out. If they decide later it is and they want to fight it, it's going to cost a hell of a lot more probably to fight that than it is.
Right. It's probably going to be 2023 before we have a judge decide whether a face mask is technically PPE, right? Don't you think?
Exactly. I just think it's important to throw out there because there's so many differences of opinion on it and people trying to make it black and white, and it's not.
It's not. And the Cal OSHA guidance, which talked on our other podcast and is available online, really uses the term face mask. And you also see that term used in CDC guidance. You see it from public health departments. And for those people in companies, just don't let the term face mask, face shield, face coverings become conflated for you. Understand the difference and use your best judgment. I think that really good advice, because in the world of reimbursement, you don't want to spend thousands fighting over a $3 face covering.
Right, right. Very good point.
You're kind of the respiratory protection guru around here. So this has become confusing in COVID-19 for people, respiratory protection, because it is a complex area, right? But because of your construction background and you're used to...
Thanks to silica.
There you go. Advising people about it. So give the listeners your best advice about respiratory protection, fit protection, section 5144 right now in COVID.
Sure. Well, first of all, let's just talk about the difference in voluntary and involuntary respirator use. And let's just talk about what everyone knows is N95s. So N95s, they are a respirator. And if you require an N95 for a task, and that's the only way to get it below whatever the permissible exposure limit for whatever task they're doing, then you fall into the respirator program. Now, what does that mean? When you require the N95
and you just demonstrated with your hand to your face.
That's right. I got a face for radio, so I guess it's the N95 mask. So say you require it. So that means that you now are in the respirator program section. And so there are a bunch of requirements. You have to be fit tested for which N95 fits that individual. Everyone must be clean shaven that wears it. There must be a medical evaluation of each employee to determine whether they are medically fit to wear a respirator because of the breathing that is restricted, right, and that sort of thing. And you have to have the written program that has all of the training, all the requirements, all of the
record
elements.
Keeping,
I won't go record keeping. I won't go through all the details of the program, but once you require it, then you're in it, so to speak. Now, there's what we're seeing with COVID-19 and in other contexts is voluntary use. You could wear a face covering or you could wear an N95 mask. If it's voluntary, there is an appendix. It's called Appendix D, which basically you provide that to your employee and it lets them know, hey, this is being provided to you for voluntary use, that it's not required by the company to be worn, and it is not required for the task in order to maintain the exposure limit for them. So the idea is that without the respirator or with the respirator, let's do in COVID compare, face covering, which doesn't have a rating, versus N95. You can wear a face covering that has no rating, which is not a respirator, and be in compliance with the guidance and the CDC. So there's no difference. Arguably, it may add some extra protection because of the filtration rate of it, but it's still not a required. And so by the voluntary, they have to understand it isn't. And then the document explains Appendix D, how to fit test it themselves, that it should be clean shaved, all the things that go with that. But it's very important to distinguish between that, so that voluntary and Appendix D to protect yourself, because you don't have to have a written respiratory protection program. Now, the other thing that seems to be getting confused today with COVID-19, you still have tasks out there. You may have folks that are part of your current respirator protective program and are required to wear N95s. In my mind, that trumps. So if you only have 10 N95 respirators, then maybe for the COVID portion of your protection program, make sure you use the face coverings or whatever you're doing to comply and maintain those for the ones where you do have to wear it. And those folks have been fit tested and medical tested and all that. Now, well, we're on that topic of medical
tests. No worries.
That you have to do this every year for your respiratory protection program, annually fit test, annual medical evaluation. What's happening now? Well, it's hard to get that done.
Very difficult.
Because of COVID-19 and the shutdowns and all the things that go with that. If that's the case, and let's say your annual test fell in May, which we know May was almost impossible, document why you couldn't schedule it. Document that it was trying to be scheduled and when you have a date scheduled or when you're going to do or how you're going to do it so that it's not a get out of jail free completely card, but I feel like we can defend that as that we were acting as reasonable possible to accomplish what we had to do under the program. And if Cal OSHA should come in and do that, I can't promise anything. At least we have something to point
some good
to
that faith we're trying. Efforts.
Right.
You know, we've had people come in, employers ask us about employees bringing their own N95 mask just because the employee maybe is fearful of COVID. The employer might be requiring just simple face coverings or providing those disposable surgical masks, but the employees want to bring their own N95. And what I've been saying is okay, well, if your employee wants to bring their own N95, as long as they're not creating a greater hazard using the N95, it's not really your place or a good idea to try to quote unquote stop them. What do you think of that?
I agree completely, but I would hand them the appendix D when they walk in with their N95 on. What we're talking about N95s, there's this new trend called KN95s.
Yes.
Out there, which is a different filtration rate and hasn't been accepted by Cal OSHA for a lot of different things. COVID-19, it's used as a face covering. But I would say if they're wearing a KN95, I would hand them the Appendix D too.
I like the Appendix D, having them sign off that they got it and recording that they have it. And you can just go to the DIR Cal OSHA website. You can print out Appendix D for giving it to them, just like you can look up the guidance for each particular industry while we're in COVID. There's guidance and checklist, and they're all available online. So I think that's a pretty good resource. Now, with that, we were talking before this podcast, kind of comparing our notes about different citations we've seen for PPE. I've seen citations for not training on PPE, where someone wasn't trained that they couldn't add knit gloves on top of the rubber gloves, right? And so the gloves get pulled into a machine, and because of the PPE that the person was wearing on their hands. I've seen training citations related to not training on PPE, whether it was around mask or face shields, things like that. What are some of the other top kind of PPE violations you see Cal OSHA putting out?
Yeah, well, we talked about it kind of at length earlier, is the hazard assessment part, yeah. Right? And let's put this in context of COVID-19 a little bit, and I'm going to dovetail what you're talking about on the training portion. We see this now, and we haven't seen any citations yet because they're just starting to get out there and do inspections, but one may be, if I get my crystal ball, is did you train them how to wear their face mask? And we think that's very common, but it probably is a good idea to include in your program and your training, cover the nose, cover the mouth, try not to touch it with your hand, keep it clean, whatever the face case may be, right? I think that's important. And then in your analysis, let's put it in COVID-19 context, is when, where, how, why do they wear a face covering in their COVID-19? For example, we see cases where sometimes there is social distancing is very easy. I had a case where the person's rolling trusses on a construction site. They're 40 feet apart. They're in the air. Right. So maybe the hazard analysis is you aren't going to wear a face covering because you're working at heights. It's 90 degrees out, so you have that exit heat illness issue. And so some things like that to be thinking outside the box of just what the CDC guidance so you've identified and documented the analysis of why and when and where it's worn.
I think that's important. And I think as people listen to this during the summertime, how you were going to implement PPE in the face of 100-degree weather in the Central Valley, right? What kind of mask are people going to be wearing? What kind of body coverings? That's going to require some pretty serious analysis and some effort, but you better get it right.
Yeah. Or at least do an analysis where you come to a right conclusion based on your analysis. You can argue about whether you're right or wrong later.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks, Karen. That was great. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to Karen and Kevin today. Look for our blog articles on ogletree.com. We have recorded a bunch of related webinars to COVID-19, and OgleTree has an awesome COVID-19 resource center with webinars, blog articles, podcasts, and a bunch of other materials for you to look at on the website. So I invite you to take a look at that and take care and stay safe and healthy.
Everybody stay safe out there.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.